about them Irish.
I can't take it anymore. I need a national championship.
This is the Four Horsemen Podcast.
And we are back. A sixth season of the Four Horsemen Podcast. I can't believe whoever's in charge of moderating podcasts are letting us do a sixth season of this. But here we are up to our own shenanigans once again for another Notre Dame Fighting Irish football season. I am Dylan, joined by Steve. Wow. Back from Ireland, so I get to cover the season again with you guys. How are you feeling, Steve?
This might be, honestly, weirdly enough, just the best feeling I think I've ever had going into a Notre Dame season. And every single August, I am all aboard the 12-0 train, and or at the very least think that they can compete for a playoff spot. But, you know, spoiler alert, I'm right there again. And I'm all smiles. I feel like everything is kind of coming together exactly of everything we've always wanted. And, you know, we'll get into everything little by little. There's a lot on the docket today, but I'm feeling great about the season. How about you?
I'm feeling really excited too. It's a young team, but I think the young players, from what we've seen in the spring game and through camp, have really taken that step up. And it's the young players that are the elite athletes. You know, of course there are elite athletes in, you know, top to bottom of the roster, but that's the dominant recruiting classes, right? That 2022 class that Freeman brought in on defense, you know, you're going to see Jalen Snead more this year. You're going to see Tui Halamaka. You're going to see Burnham, right? You're going to see Tyson Ford. You know, it's going to be good to have those guys kind of play at that level on top of the development we've seen. I'm excited. And with the quarterback situation the way it is, I'm with you, Steve. I think this could be one of the best seasons in recent Notre Dame history. It's a tough schedule, but the team is really good, and I'm excited for it. So, you know, speaking, you know, from Ireland, having come there last season, to where we're starting off the season this year, Dublin Navy week zero. I can't remember another week zero game we've played. I think maybe Navy in 2012. Mm-hmm. How what are you thinking of this? Are you excited for it, or do you like the fact that we're playing in Ireland, or would you kind of like that game at home?
No, I love it being in Ireland, and it's just it's a unique experience that the university gets to pitch, right? Because we have like these such unique and almost one of a kind roots that really no other school or program has. Where, you know, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, they don't have a place to travel to internationally that people are going to give a crap about, right? Whereas, you know, you get to pitch to these recruits, it's like not only are you going to get to go to a completely different country, which, you know, unfortunately or unfortunately, you know, for some of these, recruits and high school football players and their circumstances in life, they would probably never have that opportunity. But they're getting an opportunity to travel, to be on national television, to, you know, to play in a game which, knock on wood, they should beat the other team 50-0. and it's just such this cool, unique thing where you get to experience culture and travel and, you know, be in the bright lights. And I just think it's awesome. So no other school could ever possibly do that. So, you know, just lean into it. And again, it's just one more, you know, bullet in the recruiting arsenal, basically.
Yeah, so it's the Aer Lingus Classic. You know, other schools have made their way to Dublin, but it's not the same, right? It's Notre Dame had set the record for most international fans traveling for a sporting event. It's different when it's at Notre Dame. You know, that Dublin is a phenomenal city. It's going to be popping. You know, there's going to be a lot of Americans there, but there's going to be local interest too. You're going to see the Irish kind of show up. Maybe not, you know, as many numbers and as dedicated as the local fans are, but the sport is growing. And like you said, Steve, what other school has that opportunity, not just to go to Dublin, but to be able to sell out that stadium and have the city buzzing,
embraced.
Be embraced, right? And They'll be supported, you know, just because they're called the Fighting Irish. I can tell you from coming from an Irish family, that was a reason to cheer for them. That's certainly not something I was ever offended by, nor do I think the Irish people are, because there is Notre Dame support. You know, you go to the Guinness factory for anybody traveling, you go to the gift shop, you'll see Notre Dame stuff there. That's, I was taking pictures of that in December. Couldn't believe my eyes seeing, you know, Notre Dame gear in Dublin. So it's a thing. And it's one of those unique things that keeps Notre Dame special, that keeps Notre Dame different. And it's something that I really love to be a part of. So let's jump right into it.
Well, really quickly, and while we're on the topic, just because last year was so hectic with me and, you know, Mr. P-Wagon, who's out today on dad duties, we were obviously doing, you know, the majority of shows, and you had you were out in Dublin last year finishing up university and with your law degree, and you were watching all the games out there one way or another, whether it be by clicking random hyperlinks on the internet or finding your way down to a local pub. But give the listeners and me, because, you know, this is stuff that we, you know, kind of haven't really gone into too much detail with, but what was your experience like out there? What was the fanfare like? Was there any sort of camaraderie? Was there any sort of interest from the locals? And can we, you know, what can, you know, people traveling to this game as they're listening to this podcast, what can they expect of their time over in Dublin?
Great question. On my first day in Dublin, I ran into a Notre Dame ambassador on campus at University College Dublin. And immediately I go start talking college football with him. And he was telling me, I'm sure the pub will be packed, but there's a place in Dublin called Kennedy's, and that's where the Notre Dame alum and family and friends in Ireland go to watch the game. They watch it at that pub. So locals come, they tune in. They're not the driving force there. It's the alum abroad and it's the students abroad. So for the game that I'm going to talk about, I went to the pub. The reason I haven't gone back to the pub is that it was for the Marshall game. And I assumed the pub was cursed. So
yeah.
the Ohio State game, I was still on this side of the Atlantic. But then for the first game against, for the game against Marshall, I was in Dublin. So I brought some friends of mine. We go to the pub, and I had met so many Notre Dame people, you know, alum, current students. I mean, people might even be listening to this. Some people had followed us on Twitter and knew who we were. It was kind of cool being like, yeah, I'm the guy from that stupid Twitter account. And yeah, it was cool to get to meet some people. I met actually this one guy on vacation. He was golfing and he said, I'm going to be honest. I know this is a room of Notre Dame people, but I'm a Michigan guy. And we all start booing. Hmm. And I was having a conversation with him. Not only was he a Michigan guy, he claimed to have been on the Michigan football team in the late 70s, early 80s. He was a quarterback under Bo. And he was talking about that. So, I mean, I can't verify his identity, but you certainly run into some interesting characters in these settings. So it was a great environment. It was a horrible game. You should definitely expect some passion. Once the fans are in the city, you'll be seeing them around. Aviva Stadium is wonderful. I went to go see a national soccer game there. So for the fans going to that game, have a lot of fun. The views are excellent. But yeah, what a time. For the rest of the, you know, I was watching, but I was traveling a lot, so I didn't watch too many other games with people. But one night we were traveling at a hostel, and it was the USC week, and it was 2-3 in the morning, and I said to my one friend, I'm gonna make you watch this game with me, and we stayed up till ungodly hours to watch Notre Dame play USC. But that's it, you know, you find your way to make do, and I'm glad to be back, glad to kind of be on a more routine schedule with you guys. But what a great place, what a great time, and I seriously everybody who's going to the game, have a blast. It'll be lots of fun.
Beautiful. Well, thanks for providing that insight to both me and the listeners. And now I'll jump back over to you. You take it away, list the agenda for us, and let's hop right into it, buddy.
Well, I think we should first talk about something we never really got to cover, which we wanted to, which is the 2023 recruiting class. You and I follow recruiting. We love it. We had Drake Bowen on the show just two episodes ago.
Great guy.
Which, fantastic. He's going to be great special teams player and then eventual captain of this defense. So, yeah, let's get into that recruiting class. I'll Let's do rapid fire. I'll name a guy. I got the on three rankings here, so I'll just go them the way they have them in order. And give me your thoughts in, 15, 20 seconds. I'll do the same, and we'll hammer through this class, because overall, despite the decommitments, despite the Dante Moore fiasco, I think this is an elite recruiting class. And I think in 2 to 3 years, there's going to be some serious NFL talent on this team. So start us off here. Offensive lineman from Illinois, Charles Jagasaw.
Yeah, the Jag. He's just from outside of Chicago. Big boy, 6'6", 308. As with most offensive linemen, especially at Notre Dame, it'll probably take him 2 or 3 years to get onto, into some serious playing time. But, I mean, really, really high ceiling here. He was a top 50 recruit nationally. So you can expect that he's going to be a starter, sooner rather than later. And man, oh man, that guy's going to be able to move mountains.
What I like about him is that he's very versatile. You can play him at tackle or guard. He's just such a behemoth, and he is physically ready probably to play right now, which is also cool if we get any kind of injury problems. So you're adding that dynamic, versatile, big, athletic. He was a wrestling champion, I believe, in his division. It's awesome. What a huge get for Notre Dame. It's important to get these top 50 guys every class on the offensive line and keep that OLU tradition going. So big, really excited for that. The next player, too, could be the most dynamic player in the class. Jeremiah Love, running back from Missouri, I believe the St. Louis area.
Yeah, Sneaky might be my favorite. I haven't appointed a favorite yet, but he's definitely up there. He's 6 foot 190. He can fly. Like, he's really quick. He's really shifty and just extremely athletic. He's almost like a Theo Riddick on steroids, is kind of what it looks like when I've seen him play. So he's a pass catcher. He can run routes. He's I think a punt and kick returner as well. Yeah. And so he's gonna probably see playing time sooner rather than later. Top 100 recruit. And there's something about running backs from the Missouri area that just do well at Notre Dame historically. So I'm really excited for J Love.
Me too. And when we do this, Steve, we usually take a pet cat on offense and defense. So we'll get the mind going now, so we can think of one at the end when we recap here who we like. Jeremiah Love's got to be in the top question for me too. I'm not the biggest running back guy in the world, but this is the type of athlete you want to be at running back. Super fast. He really climbed the recruiting rankings over time, which is something I've noticed with the Freeman recruiting staff. Not only are they great at recruiting, but they're really good at identifying talent before it breaks out. And you saw this last year time and time again, right? Dylan Edwards was another guy who flew up. Brandon Hillman, who obviously, unfortunately, couldn't sign with the class due to certain issues and ended up at Michigan. You have great talent identifiers, and you have great recruiters. And if they get to the development, which we know they can, at least certain coaches on the staff can, this is going to be an elite, elite program. That's what's so exciting about this right now as a Notre Dame fan, despite a 9-4 season, is there's so much going on there. So moving on, we got our captain, Drake Bowen, linebacker, Indiana. What's there to say about him that hasn't been said already? It's the character. It's the leadership qualities. It is the athleticism. I'm a huge fan of Drake, obviously, for coming on the show, but just as a person and as a player, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, he's built like a brick shit house, and he's just really athletic, man. And he was an iron man in high school. He played running back and was scoring. He was going for like 220 a game with like 3 rushing touchdowns. And then on the other side, he would average like 11 tackle. I don't know the exact stats, but he would just be a tackling machine. Can get to the quarterback, but he's just a really versatile, probably going to be a Mike middle linebacker. That's just going to be able to plug holes and bring down ball carriers. So he's just going to be the absolute anchor of this defense going forward. Captain ND for sure.
Yep. I love the versatility too, because you were saying Mike could probably be a Will as well. Rover might be a little small for him, but there's so much you can do with that kind of athlete. Speaking of athletes who are just freaky, Christian Gray, corner, Oda, Missouri. It's another state Notre Dame, particularly St. Louis, is starting to dominate. And what do you think of Christian Gray?
I'll call Christian Gray my defensive pet cat. This is the type of corner that you're going to need as college football evolves. He's the prototype that Notre Dame always goes for, 6 foot 175. Very long arms. He's also very fast, and that he's everything that we want. One of the best players, on the board. I think he was in his position a top 20 player as a corner. So, in a world where things are being spread out, and especially one-on-one balls on the outside, you need someone with size and length that's going to be able to bat balls down and contest and go up against some of the best, shiftiest, fastest wide receivers when you play in Alabama, a Clemson, an OSU. This is the type of guy that you want on the back end of the defense. And I think we got an absolute star in the making.
Yeah, I don't know if you could have said that any better. I would add two things to it. One, the fact that we've stacked back-to-back classes of Benjamin Morrison and Jaden Mickey, and then you're following it up with Christian Gray and Micah Bell, we're going to get to as well. But you have some elite athletes who are already basically fighting for game time as freshmen. That is awesome. That is how you rebuild. We've gone from secondary being a liability to being maybe the strength of the defense, and I love that. Coach Mickens has done a phenomenal job in both development and recruiting. Hats off to him. The second thing I want to say, Notre Dame beat Ohio State and LSU for Christian Gray, and that's not a, oh, they were, you know, they Ohio State wanted him, but not that much, and they weren't his top choice. No. They wanted him. LSU wanted him. Notre Dame got him. Huge recruiting win. Definitely pet cat shout for sure. Moving on, Braylon James, just one of many out of Texas. Wide receiver. What do you think there?
Yeah, he's got a good body. I'm not sure if I want to see him stay at the 185 that he came in at, or if he might be better off getting up to about 200 pounds and maybe being a slot guy. But he can certainly play on the outside. So again, versatility. He can play inside. He can play out. He was projected to be like one of the best wide receivers that we had, but so far there's been other guys that have been like really stepping their game up so far. And we'll get to them, but, I possibly the highest upside out of anybody. And I think that's why he was, rated so high. I think he was rated 126th in the country. So, he might not get any time as a freshman. Who knows? That's yet to be seen. But remember the name, because Braylon James is going to make a mark on this institution if he gets the time here.
Yeah, to me, he's an outside guy, but you're right, Steve. When we recruited him, the expectation was he's got maybe the highest ceiling, but he's got a little more development to do before he sees the field. And I think he's along a great progression. I've heard good things in camp, so excited for him. That's going to be definitely a long-term huge addition. But speaking of one of the wide receivers who've made a huge, huge impact so far, particularly in the blue and gold game, Jaden Greathouse, wide receiver out of Texas, played at one of the best high schools in America and utterly dominated his entire career there. Looks like he's going to see some time as a freshman. What are you thinking?
Yeah, Jaden Greathouse, exactly like you said, was out of Westlake in Austin, Texas. His numbers were outstanding there. He basically led his team, obviously not only in receiving, but he led them to the pretty deep playoff run. I don't think they won the state title, but and then we saw in the blue and gold game, he's been a monster. And then every single clip you see coming out of camp is him just dominating corners. And again, we have really, really good corners. So yeah, he might be one of the most exciting prospects. He's 6'1.5". I mean, if this kid was 6'3", I can only he would be like Megatron territory, but he honestly still might play that way because he's so smooth that every single time he makes a cut, he cuts himself open on every single route, just finds a way. And man, oh man, I'm really excited about Greathouse as well.
Such a great player. And you said something there super interesting. Austin, Texas. Steve, is there a major D1 blue blood football program near Austin, Texas, or in Austin, Texas?
I've heard of one, and they also allegedly have three of the best wide receivers in the country in their receiving room this year, and with a bunch of five-star quarterbacks there. So, interesting.
Yeah, they really want a Greathouse as well. That's a huge recruiting victory for the Irish. Moving on to a late riser. We had said that he was severely underrated before he committed to Notre Dame, and while he was still committed to the Pitt Panthers, quarterback Kenny Minchie out of Tennessee, the same high school as Golden Tate. What do you think of our QB1?
Once again, when you, I use the word smooth for Great House and smooth. This guy, Kenny Minchie, is a smooth operator. You know, very good pocket presence, throws an incredibly accurate ball, and he always seems to find the perfect touch on all of his passes when I've seen in film. He knows when to go up top, he knows when to rocket it in there, and it doesn't look rushed at all. Doesn't look like anything. It's almost effortless. So he's a very high IQ guy as well. So he just reads defenses very well. And you know, in the worst case scenario, you know, again, knock on all the wood, you know, we have two very viable backup quarterbacks, and Kenny Minchie is one of them as a true freshman too, which is impressive.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said there. Super impressed with Minchie. Love that we got him in the class. I can't wait for that battle next year after Sam Hartman graduates with Angeli, Minchie, Carr. That's gonna be one heck of a battle. Big upside here, like you said, the touch is phenomenal, and he's a modern day quarterback athlete. He's a pocket passer, but he is athletic and he can move if he needs to, and that's what you love to see. So hugely excited for Kenny Minchie. Hopefully we don't have to see him this year in anything other than mop up duty. And then we'll see how that progresses. So maybe the most underrated player, because he started off as a 5-star and ended up not as a 5-star. Brennan Vernon, defensive lineman / animal out of Ohio, beat the Buckeyes for him, who really wanted him. What do you think of Vernon?
Love him. Absolutely love Brennan Vernon. The word violent has come out just recently about the kid. Who was that? Nana Asofamensa, who was being interviewed, and he said he's one of the most violent freshmen he's ever seen. And again, he was, I think, the number 8 overall recruit in the entire country, 5-star, rated like 0.99 something at the time of his commitment to Notre Dame. So one of the, I think he was like a top 10 recruit all time at Notre Dame at the time of his signing. And then allegedly he just, you know, dropped off a cliff in talent, which doesn't make any sense. But, you know, again, rankings are at most of the time, unfortunately, political, especially as we've seen with Notre Dame recruits. But it is what it is. He didn't attend some camps, was it, that he dropped? Yep, same with Drake Bowen. Didn't attend as many camps after he committed. And ultimately, that's what kind of juices up the ratings. But he's a really big body. He can, if he wants to, he can go on the outside and play end. If he wants to fill out with some weight, he can come inside and play nose tackle and also just completely plug up every imaginable hole and just be an absolute game disruptor. So this is an unbelievably massive signing, both in the size of him and then also in the scope of really reinforcing the defensive line for the next couple of years.
Yeah, well said. Nothing I can add there other than, you know, he's an animal and he's going to be a really successful Notre Dame player.
He's also like a psycho. Like, like that, he's gone through so many different hair changes. He's had, like, he has all these earrings, and like, I think he said he listens to like heavy metal rock and everything. Like, he's a fucking terrifying person.
Yeah, he's a stylish
in all
dude.
Of the best
I love
ways.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that fit for us. Next, Jaden Osberry, another underrated player, linebacker out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, whose father went to LSU. Interesting. Big time player. Rover, maybe Will in the future. What do you think of Osberry?
Kind of reminds me of basically the next Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah.
Yeah, super. You watch his film and he's one of the most exciting high school players to watch. He's just a dominant linebacker. He's going to get some special team time too. Love what he brings. When you add that to the 2022 linebacker class, the class that we just saw come in here with Jalen Snead, obviously Tui Halamaka and Burnham have been moved to Viper, so there is more of a need there. But you add that, and then you look at 2024, man, this linebacker group is going to be ridiculous. So many talented players. Love it. Marcus Freeman definitely leading the way there. Obviously, Brandon Hillman had to be released from his letter of intent, ended up at Michigan. So then we move to Boubacar Traore, another Massachusetts kid, We've been getting a lot of those lately. Defensive lineman, edge, inside. We'll see where he goes. What do you think of Boubacar?
Yeah, 6'5", so he has a great frame again, where he can put on some weight if he really wants to. But you know, coming in at 245 pounds, he's probably beefed up to, I think, probably 255, 260 since he's got on campus with the weight programs and everything. So yeah, he wears it well. Again, you know, jumps off the ball, can really make, you know, once he impacts the offensive line, he pushes them back with authority because he's just so fucking strong. He has a ton of upside, and it's crazy to think that Massachusetts is creating that, you know, that style or that quality of recruit, but don't sleep on that. You know, this guy definitely has a future.
Yeah, and Massachusetts is a state that Notre Dame has a built-in advantage of, right? The Northeast in general is a very Catholic area. It's a very pro-sports town, but Notre Dame, when it comes to college, you think Boston, you think New York, you think Philly. So these are areas when they start producing recruits, Notre Dame's got to start getting them, and that's what we've done so far. Boubacar is one of the many that are contributing to that. I could see this player being big time at Notre Dame. Love what he offers. Next has to be maybe the biggest winner of the offseason / training camp, fall camp, and that is wide receiver Rico Flores from California. Good Lord. These clips that we're seeing from him are ridiculous. What are you thinking, Steve?
Yeah, I'll be totally forthright and honest. I underestimated the kid. I knew he was good. I didn't know he was this good. Quick twitch, unbelievable catcher in traffic, can contort his body seemingly in every which way to make catches, especially even when there's someone defending him. And again, smooth route runner that finds a way to get himself open. So he is right behind Merriweather on the depth chart. So he is going to see time. He earned himself time in camp. Yeah, again, as a backup, and maybe he only gets, you know, three targets a game, but he earned those three targets as a true freshman. Holy crap, is he talented.
I can't wait. I mean, he's a really polished receiver, went to a great high school, played in a great league there in California. So really excited about that. You got to start winning California again. Obviously, you're not going to get all the five stars, but you got to get your talent out of there while you can. Huge pickup for Notre Dame. And Chancey Stuckey's recruiting job and development, because we've seen players break out last year. Particularly our boy there at wide receiver, whose name is escaping me at the moment, Jaden Thomas. Yeah. You know how it goes, Steve. I could do this in my sleep, but once you're recording, you start forgetting names. Right. You get that from Chancey Stuckey. Love the job he's doing there. And JT's going to have a great season. Defensive line player out of Maryland by way of Mississauga, Ontario, Canada, Devin Houston, defensive lineman, will definitely probably play that nose guard, one tech position that Notre Dame likes to use in a four-man front or when they do their hybrid 3-3-5. I really like this player. I'm obviously biased. What do you think there?
Yeah, he's going to be probably going to take a couple more years to develop just because of what's ahead of him. And that's no knock on him. It's just because, again, we are so unbelievably deep and have really built up incredible classes. But yeah, he's a big body again that can really disrupt the line of scrimmage and especially fill gaps and hopefully, you know, break through, get to the quarterback and get to the running back in the backfield. And I think he's definitely going to work his way into that role.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there. There's so much depth on the defensive line, but he brings that that big body nose that Notre Dame doesn't have a lot of. A lot of Notre Dame's noses have been undersized kind of on purpose, but like you think your Kurt Heinisch's, your Howard Cross. I think this is a different type of nose, and I'm really excited to see what he can do at Notre Dame. Moving on, you've got Cooper Flanagan, tight end from California. He's another guy who just kind of like went down the rankings after he committed because he stayed quiet, but the reports in camp have been really positive. Tight end is a really open position at the moment. What do you think of Coop?
Anytime you're a tight end that's 6'5", 230 pounds as a true freshman, you're going to stand a chance at you know, getting some early playing time. And maybe it's as a third tight end, some special teams, some certain packages, you know, if they bring in three tight ends on the field. But again, he could be an early contributor early on in his career, maybe as like a sophomore slash redshirt freshman. We might see him, you know, really starting to make a name for himself. So great tradition of tight ends at Notre Dame. Obviously, we're TEU, and no reason to think that this kid isn't going to fill those shoes. So bright future ahead for Coop as well.
Yeah, when you're a tight end and your last name is Flanagan, there's only one school you can go to. Moving on to, I think, maybe the fastest guy in the class, although that would maybe start a war if you were to tell that to the 2023 recruits, because they're all very fast. But I got to go Micah Bell, corner out of Texas. Very raw player. We might not see him play corner for a year or two, or, you know, however long it takes, but could be a special teams player early and has the potential to be that dynamic, explosive corner who can hang with the best receivers in the country.
Yeah, exactly. 5'10", 170. So, you know, he's probably not going to go vertically, but he can at least put a little bit of weight on him. But yeah, he's an absolute burner coming out of Houston, Texas. And yeah, what else is there to say? No one's going to be beating him over the top. So he's going to be able to contest catches all over the place just because of that closing speed. So he really is going to be, I mean, he's a top 250 athlete in the nation. So it really just shows, again, we're stepping up our game. And Notre Dame, our defense might be nicknamed the no-fly zone in, pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm loving the way we're recruiting it there. Next, I think, is one of the more just question marks as we – I'll explain why in a second. But Sullivan Absher, offensive tackle slash could probably play guard, out of North Carolina. What do you think there?
Yeah, exactly. Could be inside or outside. 6'5", 310 pounds coming into camp here. And he is, again, falling into a part where it's probably going to take him potentially 2 to 3 years to get onto the field. But at such a big frame and with the versatility to go inside or out, maybe he gets on in the lineup a little bit sooner, just depending on things. But big body, and from everything that I've seen, is, you know, he just does his job well. Very solid, consistent player.
Yeah, the reason I say maybe the biggest question mark is because he might have the potential to be one of the next great offensive linemen at Notre Dame. And the reason I say that is his high school, from what I understand, played a very like option heavy offense where he only ran block. And he was dominant. He's a dominant run blocker. That's no question there. We just haven't really seen him be a pass blocker. And if he develops those skills with what we already know he can be as a run blocker, you're looking at potentially a dominant offensive lineman on the college level. So I'm super excited for Sullivan Absher. That's going to be one to watch for the future. But like you said, Steve, there's so many great, talented players on the depth chart that it might take a while to see. Let's move back to the secondary. I'm going to go Adon Schuler, safety, New Jersey. One of, I think, the most underrated guys in the defensive side of the ball.
Yep.
What are you thinking there? New Jersey's our territory, your territory at least, you know, the Northeast. What are you thinking?
Yeah, New Jersey has a surprisingly really good high school football scene. When you think Northeast, you wouldn't think that, but New Jersey kind of has like an outsized proportion. Same with I think like the Maryland area is also pretty damn good. And typically those are Penn State guys. Penn State does a great job in that territory, but we came in and we fought and we won for Adon Schuler. So 6 foot, 200 pounds as what projects to be a safety, and reads the field well, has great closing speed. So as soon as he makes a decision and makes a read on a pass, you know, he can really get there, can lay the lumber, and can also play some pretty damn good coverage as well. So yeah, I think he's sneaky. One of the best players in the class. I think he's criminally underrated.
Definitely. It's huge to get those New Jersey guys too. And safety's been an area of need. But then you double it up with Ben Minnick, safety out of Ohio. When he first committed, it was kind of a recruit people didn't really know. I think Malik Hartford was on his team in Ohio, so he may have been a little outshined there or underappreciated. And then really in his senior season started to really turn heads, and you're getting another quality safety here. So what do you think of Ben, and do you think maybe we see him early in his career?
Possibly. It all depends, you know, so many different factors. He's 5'11", 185 coming in. So again, it's kind of that middle range where he's decent with height, but, you know, would love a safety to be around 6'1", 6'2", in my opinion, but it doesn't always matter because there's guys that always play bigger than themselves. Just like, think Troy Polamalu. I think he was only 5'10 or something. So, I think he committed as a 3-star and really shot up. He is a top 250 national recruit. He's actually ranked ahead of Micah Bell, which is saying something. So coming from Ohio, he knows how to play in, you know, in Midwest weather. He's to the fact that we pulled a really good safety out of Ohio is, again, a testament to the recruiting that's been going on in South Bend the last couple of years. And he's always been seen as a really high upside type of guy. So don't know how early we'll see him, but we will be announcing his name on Saturday sooner rather than later.
Nice. I'm going to turn to two interior offensive linemen. First, Joe Otting out of Kansas. From what I understand, he is going to be the center in this class. They don't really have a lot of centers on the depth chart. I mean, a lot of guys can probably move inside, but I think that's where they're going with Otting. I think he's an underrated guy. I mean, I say that a lot, but Kansas isn't a state known for producing top offensive linemen, or just that's probably their best position, but just recruits in general out of Kansas aren't usually 5-stars. So it's an underappreciated state, and sometimes this affects the recruiting rankings of these guys. The best example is Joe Alt, right? Joe Alt was in a state not known for producing talent, was underrated, and look at him now. I think Otting can be that kind of guy from the interior. What do you think there?
From your lips to God's ears, brother. Yeah, he's 6'4", 275, so I think he's the smallest of the offensive linemen coming into this class. But if your center is 6'4", 275 and can probably play at, you know, a 290, 295 weight eventually when he gets onto the field, whether that's in, again, you know, 1, 2, 3 seasons from now, that's a really big offensive line. And he moves well. You have to move well as a center, obviously, if that's what he's projecting to be. So he's going to be a project, but most offensive line are, and can't wait to see, you know, how he progresses over the course of his career. But there's definitely an upside. And I think, yeah, he's probably being discounted because of the state that he comes from. Exactly correct.
And you follow that up with Sam Pendleton, another interior offensive lineman. Clemson really wanted him. Notre Dame scored a huge recruiting win there. How do you feel about Sam? And is this also a situation where, you know, maybe a few years down the line, this guy could be starting for Notre Dame?
Yeah, exactly correct. So he comes in as only a 3-star, but again, if you're fighting a Carolina prospect really hard all the way to the end against Clemson, it says something. Right. So he's, again, probably going to be a bit of a project, but at a 6'4", 305 frame, you know, there's so much you could do with that. Again, he could, you'll probably be an interior guy, one of the guards, but we'll see how everything plays out for him. But definitely, again, a high upside.
Yeah. I think you covered it right there. Armel Mercom. I hope I said that last. Mukum. There's no R there. Armel Mukum, defensive lineman from out of Virginia, but I believe by way of Montreal or the surrounding area. He is Canadian, so we got two of us on the offensive on the defensive line here. Underrated recruit. You know, that's common for a lot of Canadian players who are not as polished maybe when they go to the States to play, but high athletic upside. How are you feeling about this this recruit?
Yeah, again, this is a guy that kind of started, I think, as a 3-star recruit when he originally committed to the Irish, and then he's just slowly but steadily raised in those rankings. So he's ranked in the top 200, 193rd overall, and an edge guy, 6'3.5", 255 pounds, so a bit slimmer, more like those pterodactyl-type arms that can really get around offensive tackles and just, you know, disrupt from the outside. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see him getting, you know, some snaps as a backup at probably in his sophomore year is probably what I would assume, just based on, again, depth chart and who's ahead of him. But one of these depth guys that is going to probably start at some point in his career with really high upside.
Yeah, I think you said it perfectly well. And as a Canadian, I'll be rooting for him. But of course, I'm super biased. Next, linebacker Preston Zinter out of Massachusetts. This is another guy who I think is a victim of where he's from in the country in terms of rankings. I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. And I think we're going to see him on the field sooner than people expect. So what do you think of the local Massachusetts guy? Although you are a South Carolina man now, but as in your heart, you're from the Northeast. So how are you feeling about Preston?
Yeah. New England roots, but Charleston by choice. So Preston, actually, the stadium that he played at in his school was about a 10 to 15 minute drive from where I was when I was living back in Massachusetts. He was from Central Catholic High School in Lawrence, Massachusetts. And Central Catholic is just known for pumping out athletes in the local area. And, you know, they're really good with both basketball and hockey. And then for whatever football recruits they get, usually they're like, you know, FCS guys. But the fact that he was able to kind of stand out above the crowd and get an offer from the Irish, that really says something. And I actually think Central Catholic also has a 4-star QB that's going to Clemson next year. So there's definitely some talent on the team. But yeah, again, he's 6'3", 215 pounds coming in as a freshman linebacker. So really good size and frame, could probably put on some weight. But I think he's athletic enough where if he wants to play Rover, that can certainly be the position that he can focus in on. But if he wants to juice up and go on the inside or the weak side, I think that's also a career prospect for him. So very versatile. And again, probably a couple of year project, just given how unbelievably talented we are. I know I keep repeating myself over and over, but that's just a testament to great recruiting over the past couple of years here.
Yeah, I think I see Zinter more as a Mike, and I could see him beefing up to be maybe an edge player if they want to move him down there. I think he's going to be kind of a guy like JD Bertrand, who you look at the class rankings and you don't really think much of, but I think he's going to be an impactful player for Notre Dame, and that's what's super exciting. Let's go now to Chris Tarek, a late flip from the Wisconsin Badgers. He's an interior offensive lineman from Illinois. How are you feeling about that? This is a pretty big offensive line class. I think we got five of them.
Yeah, 6'5", 310 pounds from the Midwest. So it says everything that you need to know about him. Again, he's a pretty highly ranked 3-star recruit. One of those guys on the fringe of 4-star. And once again, depth, something that's going to take a while, but with the size that he has and the experience he has, you know, just in one state over in Illinois, knowing how to play in Midwest weather and, you know, being familiar, would not be surprised if this is a guy that we look back on in a couple of years that's just like a total anchor on the offensive line again. So much talent and so much depth coming in with the offensive line and the defensive line. It's crazy to think how dominant we're going to be in the trenches.
Well said. And we'll finish it off with Caleb Smith, wide receiver out of Texas, a late flip as well. He's going to be most likely a slot player, which is great for Notre Dame. Super athletic. I'm really excited for him. Any thoughts there, or maybe we could see him soon?
Yeah, he'll probably take a couple of years to develop. 6 foot, 175 frame, so definitely built a bit more for the inside of things. And if he can just learn to shimmy and shake from the wide receiver coach Chauncey Stuckey, then you know there's a good chance that this kid is going to really develop into something special. And you know that slot position is going to open up sooner rather than later. So he might see himself finding some time early on in his career.
I love it. And that wraps up the 2023 class. One of the best I think we've seen since covering Notre Dame. Super excited for it. A lot of substantive information we've just given our audience there. So let's take a breath here and maybe talk about pet cats. You got a favorite? And if you're listening at home, please tweet at us or reach out in any way with who you think or who your guys are. From this class, because there's a lot of personality and there's a lot of people to like. So Are you got Christian Gray on defense, right? Is that changing, or are you locking
one in? I'm gonna stick with Christian Gray on defense, and then I mean the easy takes right now would be either Jaden Greathouse or Jeremiah Love, but I think I'm gonna go with Rico Flores on the offensive side just because of how impressive he's been, man. Like I've never seen anything like it where some guys come in and has put in up so many highlights as a true freshman in camp. So plays a great style of a wide receiver. And I think there's, you're going to definitely be a lot of opportunity for him to shine over the course of the next few years.
Yeah. For myself, I'm taking both Canadian defensive linemen because I'm allowed to cheat like that. that's how it's going to go. Houston and Mukum. Those are going to be my pet cats. On behalf of the podcast, though, we have to say Drake Bowen for coming on the show, for also being a future Butkus winner, captain, lifts the trophy for the national championship. That's a big one for us. And on the offensive side of the ball, there's no shortage of options here. Like I'm looking at everything, and there's so many people to choose from. Oh man, that's tough. You did say Rico Flores, man. That's a good choice. I feel like it's cheating if I go with the highest ranked guy, but I think Charles Jagasaw is going to be just a freak of nature at Notre Dame. So I'm going to go with the Jag. It's my favorite animal. On top of that, P Wagon's probably a Brennan Vernon guy.
Yeah.
So who's your offensive pet cat here? You took Rico. Rico, and that, you know, there we go. So for you, it's Rico and Christian. For me, it's Armel, Devin, and Charles, Jag. I love it. For the Horseman podcast, it's Drake Bowen. Couldn't put it any other way. Are we good to move into the college football season? You know, yeah. 2023 is a week away. I can't wait.
We're recording on Sunday. We're six days away from college football. Oh, I got a chill down my fucking spine, man. I am so happy I just said that sentence. Let's go.
It's great, man, to have college football back. There's nothing like it. This incoming class took many transfers, which we haven't seen before. Spencer Schrader, kicker from USF. Ben Krim, punter from Penn. There was another Caleb Smith from Virginia Tech, but he left the program after medically retired. Sam Hartman, of course, the Heisman hopeful. Thomas Harper, defensive back, Oklahoma State. Javonte Jean-Baptiste, defensive end from Ohio State. I think we could see a big impact player there. Antonio Carter, a safety from Rhode Island. He'll also be in that defensive back rotation. And Devin Ford, running back from Penn State, with Tyree moving full-time to the slot, they've added a running back depth piece to support Estime. And you don't want to be relying on, you know, Jadarian Price, who I think could be the best of the bunch, but coming off an injury and then a young player in pain. So they've added there. How do you feel? How do you feel about this depth chart?
Like I said at the top of the podcast here, this is just the most excited I've been, because we will definitely go through the depth chart here, but is there a weakness to this team? Because the weakness would have been unproven quarterback, right? If it had been Tyler Buchner. Obviously, we all know how everything shook out with that, and enter Sam Hartman. By God, that's Sam Hartman's music. I sprinkled some money on him to win the Heisman, and I don't see how anyone, if you have a sports book available to you, why you wouldn't, because you know, he's the all-time passer in ACC history, and he's just going to set more and more records this year. Wide receivers are kind of the only question mark, but if you've paid any attention, then you just know, like, they're going to be really good. Tobias Merriweather is like literally Randy Moss, if Randy Moss had actually come to Notre Dame instead of, you know, the circumstances that led him to Marshall. Jaden Thomas, big body guy, plays the outside, really came into his own last year as a true freshman. He was a redshirted freshman. He's a redshirted sophomore this year, so his third year on campus. the profile on him is he's not a 50-50 guy. It's a 70-30 guy. Whenever you throw a ball up to him, he almost always comes down with that ball because he's just a ball hawk. Chris Tyree, arguably the fastest player on the field, now has moved to the slot. He caught 10,000 passes, I think, in this offseason just to see like the ball coming into his hands and get more associated with being a receiver. So he's put in the work. He was basically a former five-star recruit, borderline five-star, just the way that the rankings shook out. So really talented athlete. The offensive line, we know, is going to be incredible. Tight ends, it's Notre Dame. We're fine. Running backs, Audris Estime is going to murder somebody. Like, I just think on the offensive side of the ball, it's going to be night and day from last year. And then we can talk defense in a second, but I'm going to let you riff and give your thoughts on the offense while I go tinkle and nobody's going to know.
Yeah, I think that's well said. My big concern would be if Sam Hartman gets an injury, but that's, look, not everybody has two elite starting quarterbacks in their program. That's not usually normal. And what happened last year was kind of, you know, fluky. So, yeah, is Angeli and Minshew ready to be the starter if something goes down? Maybe not, but that's true for most schools. That would be the one area I have concern. The running back depth is phenomenal. Wide receiver isn't that much of a concern for me. You know, we've got Jaden Thomas is going to be your high-volume guy. Chris Tyree will be a slot gadget guy. I think Deon Colsey can break out if he's got the skills. He's a huge body. He's athletic. He could be that boundary receiver if we need him to be. And I kind of hope Colsey takes that step forward. And then you look at the field position. You got Tobias Merriweather. I think this is the season. I think it's the season people learn that name. He's just too athletically gifted. And the size. There's just so much going for him. Sam Hartman's going to have a lot of options. Wide receiver isn't my concern. And you got to think, last year, Notre Dame's receivers, I think, looked a little, not looked worse, but the production was worse than reality because one, you know, the quarterback goes down in game two. So you have Drew Pine, who isn't the most air it down the field type quarterback. We got very conservative with how he played. Two, Michael Mayer is taking up most of those receptions. And as great as he was, generally speaking, I'd rather my receivers be the go-to point for the passing offense, and you're going to see that more now. I think a tight end will be used more in a traditional tight end role, and you'll get those opportunities. So I think the offense is going to be dominant. The offensive line is going to be a little interesting. The tackle positions are anchored by two of the best in the country between Joe Alt and Blake Fisher. No question there. The interior is going to be interesting. I mean, you got Zeke Carell coming back at center. I think he showed so much development last year. I'm feeling pretty good about that. And, you know, we'll have two starters on the inside unless Kristofic wins that spot. He's had experience there. But, you know, you're looking at Rocco Spindler. You're looking at Billy Shrouth. You're looking at Pat Coogan, Carmody. There's a lot of options there. And I think Joe Rudolph's a good coach. He's got a good track record. I'm feeling pretty good. Defensively was the question. And the big question on defense was the defensive line. And I don't know if there's a position over the course of the offseason has changed the narrative more than the defensive line. So, Steve, do you want to give me your thoughts there and how that shakes up as we head into the season?
Yeah, so, you know, what's projected here? You know, we're going to have Devontae Jean-Baptiste, the graduate transfer from Ohio State, is coming in, and he's probably going to be the starter or at the very least split time with a guy in his fifth year on campus, Nana Osofa-Mensah, who was my original pet cat from the 2018 recruiting class. And I always thought Nana really had some potential and he's got a great frame to him. He just never really has broken through yet, but maybe this is the year. But those two guys are going to cover the defensive end position. They have some help behind them, you know, with Tyson Ford, Aiden Gobira. So they're good in that regard. At the nose tackle, we have Howard Cross III, who is just an absolute plug in the middle. He's a hard man to move out of the way. You know, supported by Jason Anye from Rhode Island, shout out. And then you have Riley Mills, who is just a massive human being at the defensive tackle position, and you know he's really going to start being a disruptor this year. He's also got Gabe Rubio to help him in support. And then the Wolverine on Angel Dust, Jordan Bethello, who is an absolute psycho in his senior year here. He might be like the breakout player that's just going to turn this whole ship around and really just be a disruptive force, especially getting to the quarterback. I honestly would not be surprised if we see Jordan Bethello with 14 sacks this year. Like,
yeah,
he's really finds a way to just run all around the field and get in. So that's the I don't know. I mean, it's just crazy. And then he's got Junior Tui Halamaka on the back end supporting him as well. So really deep, really balanced, and a lot of different ways to both get to the quarterback and then plug up holes for the defensive line is what I'm seeing. How about you?
So much development, and I feel so much better about this defensive line now. I'll pick up where you left off with Jordan Bethello. I don't think, like, Isaiah Foskey is solid and will probably will be better, but I think Bethello has the potential because I think there's more of a higher athletic upside with him than Foskey. And I think, like you said, I could see him having just a ridiculous year coming off the edge, or maybe not. Maybe he gets surpassed by a freshman. You know, there is that boom and bust opportunity. But I think if he's playing the way we know he can play and we've seen flashes of, I think that's going to be a dominant edge player. You know, the depth on the edge might be a little bit of a concern because you only got Tui Halamaka and Burnham kind of listed behind him. Burnham is a pterodactyl, and I feel like if he's given an opportunity, he could also just take that position. There's just not a lot of bodies there, but that would be my one concern. You look at the defensive tackle, and I mean, they've moved apparently Tyson Ford in, and I'm looking at the depth chart, and I don't know where he gets snaps, and he had a great blue and gold game because Anya has taken probably the best development of anybody this offseason. He is just all over the highlight reels. Riley Mills has been listed by one publication as one of the most freakiest athletes going into this season. Converted back to defensive tackle. I think he's going to have a breakout year. Gabriel Rubio has taken those snaps over the last two seasons he's got and really built off of it. You are going to have a really talented player there. And I think Rubio's impact will feel even more next year. Howard Cross has never been anything other than a solid, great player for Notre Dame. How do you go with that, Steve?
Kiananea?
I
don't think I said that right.
The Polynesian names have always been our kryptonite, although I did nail Tui Halamaka down. I got to work on this one. But he's another really good player that I feel like is being underrated. Donovan Heinisch is rumored to have really great development so far since getting on campus. So that defensive line I love.
Kiananea. That's what I'm going. Kiananea. That's
someone's got to take that out of context and make it a gift.
I'm sorry. I had to stop you there because that was just driving me nuts.
No, go ahead, man.
Continue on.
No, I love it. And then you look at the strong side defensive end, Baptiste and Nana, I think are a great 1-2 punch. They can split those reps. I think both of them have potential to be a starter on most programs. So really liking the defensive line. You look at the linebacker group and it's interesting, man. You got J.D. Bertrand, who is serially underrated, a great mic for us, great leader. You know Bowen's going to be pushing. You know Zinter's pushing. I don't know if Tui Halamaka is going to be both a linebacker and an edge player. I'm not really sure on that, but he could be in that mix. You look at the will position, right? Marist could have a really good bounce back year. We're still waiting to see that twitchy athlete from before the injury. He could be there. You know, Nolan Ziegler is going to push him. You know, Jaden Osberry is going to be pushing him. Jack Kaiser could move back to that position. But if he doesn't, you got Zach Kaiser at the Rover. You got Jalen Snead at the Rover. You know, there's Osberry could play Rover. You've got so much depth and so much athleticism there. Yes, it's a little unproven, but with JD in the middle, I feel pretty good. That'll be one area to watch, but it's not one that I think is a weakness. I think it's one that could be the strength of the team by the end of the season, especially if Snead kind of turns into the baller we think he is. How are you feeling about the linebackers?
Yeah, I echo all the sentiment. I'm not worried in the least at the linebacker position. Maris Leofau did have obviously brilliant moments last year, and then he also had some moments where he just didn't seem to be in the right spot, and maybe that was mental. Just coming back from the injury, because sometimes coming back from an injury, it's more difficult mentally, you know, believing in your body that it's recovered, that you can make a move and do what you used to do, or maybe it was physical, but he's had a whole extra year to get stronger physically, recover more. And, you know, hopefully he continues back to the great play that got him onto the field in the first place. So if our biggest issue is, hey, if our guy who played really good but not as great as he used to, if he can just get back to playing great, if that's our biggest issue, I think we're going to be quite fine. And if he can't get, you know, if it can't turn that around, there again, there's an incredible amount of depth behind him. So we're in a really good spot at the linebacker position.
Well, speaking of being at a really good spot, does anybody have a better corner group in the country than Notre Dame right now? You have Cam Hart, could be a day two, maybe day one pick with a really strong season. You have Benjamin Morrison, who's going to be 3 and done as a first round draft pick at the corner position. Jaden Mickey, you just know as a true sophomore, he's going to be pushing for reps. At the slot corner, you've got Clarence Lewis, Thomas Harper is depth. Ryan Barnes is going to get in the mix. You know, you got Christian Gray pushing for time. What a loaded position. And at safety, yeah, there's some more question marks there, but I think Antonio Carter is gonna feature there. Xavier Watts, I think, is poised for a breakout year. Ramon Henderson's a super athlete. We can see if maybe he can put that together. DJ Brown's always been a solid depth player for us. With you could always count on for good snaps. I'm liking it. I'm liking the secondary. I don't think our corners are going to be beaten. I think our safeties are really going to be helped out by the defensive line and by the corners. And I think that's going to put for yet another really solid defense this year.
Yeah, exactly. So we definitely don't have Kyle Hamilton on the back end of with the safeties, but we still have guys that are solid enough and that are going to just be able to hold their own. And basically the name of the game is don't get beat deep, which I don't foresee that they will, because again, there's going to be so much pressure on quarterbacks from the front seven. And the corners, yep, absolutely locked down and are going to hopefully do just if they live up to what we think that they're going to do. This is a team that might average less than 200 yards against through the air over the course of the season. And let's talk. I mean, we know that we're going to be favored in all of the non-big games, but the big games are where those guys are really going to make or break it. You know, they need to reel in Emmanuel Emekpa and Marvin Harrison Jr. And they need to, you know, make sure that they're staying on point when they play Caleb Williams at USC. And then we have Cade Klubnik, who is a former 5-star recruit down in, down in Clemson, who, you know, by the way, got picked off by Benjamin Morrison in his only attempt against Notre Dame, not a big deal. But yeah, that's where those guys are really going to make or break the season. And I think they're up to the task. Again, I think this might be a no fly zone because there's so much talent there and a lot of depth, especially with Antonio Carter and Thomas Harper transferring in.
Yeah, those corner versus receiver battle against Ohio State is going to be so interesting to watch. But look, the advantage is for the receiver, right? If you give the quarterback all day, eventually the receiver is going to get open. So the defensive line is going to need to get pressure. We'll talk a little more about the schedule in a minute. I do want to cover the special teamers, of course, because P-Wagon would kill us otherwise. It looks like Spencer Schrader is going to be the starting kicker, and apparently he's been booting some turbo shots. Speaking of turbo, there's turbo foot Bryce McPherson, who's kind of won the punting job there. That was a big Salia recruit. Michael Vinson, of course, long snapper is coming back. Zach Yoakum is going to be involved with the team, of course, our boy. And then I don't even know who's going to be the kick and punt returner because there's so many options between Tyree, Salerno, Bell, Gray, Love, anybody. Throw a name out there. Great House was a great punt returner and kick returner. So, yeah, how are you feeling? I think the special teams are going to be special. I am going to miss, obviously, Mason, the special teams coach, but I think they'll be good, which is great because special teams is a huge advantage that can really push a team over the edge.
Let's just hope that we continue to block like 7 kicks a fucking season, because that was so much fun last year, man, to see that happening. But yeah, would definitely love to see, you know, Chris Tyree, if he is the kick and punt returner, really continue to work on the magic that he had in that big return he had against Wisconsin a couple of years back. And if we can get more big returns, get ourselves in a good field position, man, we'll be fine. If you have a punter named Turbofoot, pretty good news. You know, I think that's, we can start, you know, the Heisman campaign for P-Wagon there. And then Spencer Schrader coming in from USF, correct? Southern Florida. Yep. Perfect. My brain's working on all cylinders today. Yeah. He's a graduate transfer. So a fifth or sixth year guy, just depending on how COVID years played out for him. But he's experienced. He's been around the block. He's kicked in some pressure spots before. And I think I've seen him hit from 50 plus a handful of times so far with some field goals in camp. So he's got some distance. He's certainly got some, hopefully, you know, some pretty highly accurate and special teams last year was special. And let's hope we continue on this year with being special as well.
Yeah. I'm not just saying this to be the Homer propaganda, rah, rah, the troops before the season starts. Like, when we were feeling after the blue and gold game, I was a little concerned on the defense. I thought the offense would be good, and I was a little worried about the defense. That's not as much of a concern. And I think that's why we're all feeling so excited about this season, is the areas we wanted to see improvement, we did. And then you add a dynamic elite quarterback to this, man, it could be a special season. It's going to be a tough season. The schedule is one tough schedule, and we'll get into that, but I don't know if I've been this excited in a while. And we've always talked, Steve, we were saying this privately, 24, 25 was kind of that window we were expecting once the quarterbacks got there and Freeman's recruiting classes kind of took leadership roles. And man, that window may have opened just a season earlier. I love it.
Yeah, exactly. And I just, you know, the big man, Sam Hartman is the piece. He's the piece of the puzzle that I think ultimately opens up what could be a national championship window for Notre Dame. He looked incredible in the blue and gold game. So smooth, picking his spots. And the thing is, he has something that we haven't had over the last course of the last few seasons, even dating back to the Ian Book days. And again, no offense to Ian, the winningest quarterback in Notre Dame history, but Sam Hartman brings a pocket presence. He brings a maturity. He brings the ability to stay in the pocket one extra second, look downfield, and he is not afraid to take shots. He, by far, if you look at the advanced statistics, like his average, you know, air traveled yards, I know is like one of those new age statistics. He throws the ball downfield. He challenges defenses, and he's got big bodies on the outside. He's got a great offensive line to protect him. We have the running game. Defense has come together nicely. Like, again, I said it, you know, now for the third time, I don't see a weakness on this team. I'm so excited because it genuinely feels like this is everything we've been talking about year in and year out with recruiting, which is you need to get depth and you need to get athletes and you just need, you know, we've always recruited well and we've had great players over the years, but it's just never felt like it all came together at the same perfect time. There always was seemingly one piece missing. And it just feels like we finally put all the pieces together all at one time. And there's contingency plans on those pieces because we are so deep. So that's why I'm so excited. That's why Notre Dame is going 14-0 and winning the national championship.
Well, that's a great point to springboard off of. Let's take a look at the schedule here. I'll give the audience a rundown and then we'll recap kind of our thoughts. So obviously we're playing Navy this week, Saturday the 26th in Dublin, Ireland, at Aviva Stadium. Then we come back home to play our first ever FCS game against a historically black university, Tennessee State. That'll be the first home game at Notre Dame Stadium. Then we travel to NC State, which I think is probably the best time to get them because that is a tough environment and they are a solid team. But getting them the week after Tennessee State coming off the back of them, and the game that follows is Central Michigan. That's probably the perfect time to play the Wolfpack. But then Central Michigan comes to town. And then it's the big one. They get Ohio State in week 4. It'll be the fifth game of the year. That's a 7:30 kickoff. We'll circle back to that. But this is the hardest stretch of the Notre Dame season because you go from Ohio State to Duke, which is going to be a very underrated team this year in the ACC. That won't be an easy game by any means. Then you go back-to-back road games. Then you're going to Louisville. That's another tough game, a solid ACC team. I expect them to be better than they have been in recent years. Then you have you don't even have a bye week. Then you play USC at home. So you get that stretch of Ohio State, Duke, Louisville, USC. That is very tough. Caleb Williams, the Heisman winner, will be coming into town, 7:30 kickoff, Notre Dame Stadium. Then it's your bye week. Then we're traveling. No, sorry. Pitt is traveling to South Bend. We'll get Phil Dracovic for one last attempt to beat Notre Dame. I don't think that's going to happen. I think Pitt's going to have maybe a little bit of a rougher season. Then we go down to Death Valley to play Clemson, which will probably be in a hurricane because, you know, that's the season. Then it's home, Wake Forest, Sam Hartman's senior game at Notre Dame will be against his alma mater. And then, of course, you finish off the season at the Tree Farm, Palo Alto, California. What a schedule that is, Steve. How are you feeling?
I mean, obviously starting with Ohio State and that four game stretch is terrifying. And it's like, there is a conceivable world where we beat Ohio State and we beat USC, but drop one of those middle games, right? Just because of how brutal that is. And there effectively is no room for error. But again, I feel like this team is up for the task. Kyle McCord is going to be the projected starting QB at Ohio State, and I think he was a five-star recruit, but you know, it's taken him, I think, 3 or 4 years to get onto the field. And
I don't think anybody won that job cleanly either. I think Ohio State is kind of having a little bit of a quarterback issue.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the thing, is he's a very unproven entity. And even in his time where he has gotten snaps, if you look at his statistics historically, he's not a barn burner, so to speak. So I think there's a little bit more opportunity for us to have a really good showing against Ohio State, especially at home at night, knock on wood, please God. Duke, I think they were a 9-win team last year. Louisville has been a team on the ascendancy over the last couple of years. So yeah, those are definitely two really, really crappy games, especially with Louisville when you're on the road looking ahead at next week to your vengeance against Caleb Williams at home and with arguably your biggest rival in USC. So that's brutal. And then even if you get through all of that, then you have to travel on the road in November, to South Carolina to play Clemson in Death Valley. So it's such a tired trope that Notre Dame doesn't play anybody. Anyone who says that, like, we're playing three top 10 teams, if anyone says that, they should just be punched in the face. I don't advocate for violence, but just punch them in the face because they're stupid and don't know anything. But what a hell of a schedule. What are we projected as? Is it 8.5 or 9.5 wins on is the line that's been put forward from Vegas this year?
Yeah, I think it's 8.5.
8.5, yeah, which is basically what we were at last year. And unfortunately, we were on the under last year, but really, really hopeful. And I really think that we're going to hit that over this year, especially when we win all 12 of these games that we just mentioned.
Yeah, I'm looking at the schedule here. And when you clean through, let's just say we get to the USC week, okay? Going into that USC game, which should be the highest ranked game these two teams have played in forever, because USC is going to be good this year and so is Notre Dame. Notre Dame should be at worst a one loss team, in my opinion. They could very well be undefeated. I think Ohio State's the only game they won't be favored in. And even then, to be honest with you guys, I kind of think we're going to beat Ohio State, and I don't know if it'll be that difficult. Now, I know that's crazy. Ohio State is super talented, but just hear me out. We led for three quarters at the Shoe with the first-time starting quarterback. Now they have the first-time starting quarterback coming to Notre Dame against Sam Hartman. I just like us in this matchup, and I think we have the ability to beat them in the air, which we didn't last year, and we also have the ability to Michigan bully them because we have the offensive line, which we didn't at the time of the game last year. That's something that developed throughout the season. Yeah. So,
great point.
I kind of like that. USC, to me, is the toughest game of the year just because Caleb Williams is so dynamic. what I want to ask you, Steve, is between the big three, because I think we all agree there's three big games, like big, big games on the schedule. How do you rank them in terms of difficulty?
Oh, man. Why'd you have to ask me that question? Obviously, Clemson is coming in at third, just because I think there's some cracks in the armor down there. I still think they're a top 10 program, but I don't think they're a top four program, which is where they've been hovering the last couple of years. USC is probably at a minimum an 11 win team this year.
They have a tough schedule though, because they got to play Utah and Oregon and Washington this year.
Yeah. I'm not afraid of Oregon or Washington. I think that USC is going to handle them. I can't believe I'm saying that, but I just feel like just neither of those it's not a propping up USC. It's just, I still don't think that I don't take those two programs seriously. So they can join the Big Ten all they want to. But they're very unserious programs in my opinion. And then, you know, Utah, they can play some bully ball. So I think that's like their risk of a loss, along with Notre Dame. But I think they also probably beat Utah just because, Caleb Williams is going to be out for revenge with them. But Caleb Williams coming into South Bend in October, it's going to be October 14th. It's going to be 7:30 at night. That game is probably going to be rainy and 40 degrees. Good luck, kid. Good luck. So because of those elements, I feel like I'm so much more comfortable playing that game than the Ohio State game. Ohio State's wide receivers, of course, there's some quarterback turnover for them, but I'm more afraid of Ohio State than I am of USC, just because I still know that the trenches for USC are not what they should be for a top five program, and I feel like we can bully them around, especially if we get some Midwest weather on our side. So I'm going to go with Clemson at the three, USC is the number two, and then the hardest game being Ohio State. That's my rationale, but how are you feeling? Do you agree, or do you have anything that you'd like to add?
Well, I think that's a totally fair ranking, because we've beaten USC. We know we can beat USC. We haven't beaten Ohio State, so that's fair. I do have Ohio State and USC flipped, but you could have it either way. Here's the USC schedule, because I think we're going to be – I think this is going to be a very interesting game this year. San Jose State at home to start the season. Same day as Notre Dame Navy. They'll win that game. Home to Nevada. Should win that game. Home to Stanford. They should win that game. At Arizona State. They should win that game. At Colorado. They should win that game. At home to Arizona. They should win that game. And then it's Notre Dame. USC should be undefeated going into that game. Notre Dame at worst should be a one-loss team. That's going to be a top 10, possibly top 5 battle if they're both undefeated. What a game for the jeweled shillelagh that is going to be. I cannot wait. Ohio State will be undefeated coming into that game, as will we. So that'll also be a top 10 ranked battle. What a season. This is going to be one of the most exciting schedules in a couple years, because the ACC has been down and USC has been down. But man, I can't wait. And I cannot wait to get at these games. Notre Dame's going 12-0.
I love it. Yeah, exactly correct. Yeah, so USC's, unless they absolutely shit themselves, they should be 6-0 and ranked, ranked 6th right now. They're going to be ranked top 5. And then if Notre Dame is 7-0 at that point with a win against number 3 Ohio State, I don't see how you keep them out of the top 5. So that would be a thrilling matchup. And by the time we play in week, 1, 2, 3, 4, in the 5th week of the season, we should be a top 10 team by that point. If, assuming that everything, again, knock on all of the wood in the world, works out that way. So that's already two top 10 matchups. And then Clemson, we could be there, the third top 10 matchup in the event that they take care of Florida State at home in week 4. They actually play on September 23rd, which is the same day that we play Ohio State. So that's a great weekend for some playoff implications already.
Absolutely. But Florida State, who I do like this year, are getting way overhyped. And people look like a lot of people kind of want to see that game more than Notre Dame and Ohio State. And I guarantee you by the time those games arrive, it'll be you'd rather watch the Notre Dame Ohio State game. I think those are the two better teams. And I think they're both better than Florida State and Clemson. 100%. Death Valley is a tough environment, but I don't buy Clemson until I can see them move the ball again. But if they do, of course, that's a game that can be tough and a game we can lose. But, man, I like us this year. I really like us. Yeah, a lot of excitement. Do you want to finish this off by heading into Navy? I know it's a, you know, we're running a little long, but we had a lot to cover. So Dublin, Ireland, you know what you're getting with the triple offense. It's the first season for their new head coach, who was the defensive coordinator prior. So I don't expect much of a change. We're healthy going into it. Knock on wood, we're healthy coming out. How you feeling?
Feel great. You know, I'm just excited to see a quarterback that's going to be able to challenge these guys down the field. And exactly like you said, it's all about entering the game and then leaving the game healthy. Navy was 4-8 last year. They did have one upset victory on the road at number 20 UCF. However, UCF's starting QB left that game halfway through. I don't know if it was because of injury or if it's just because he wasn't really playing well. I wasn't able to get that stat, but just something worth noting. So yeah, of course, just the way their style of play, if you're not used to it, could put any sort of team on any week at upset alert. But because Notre Dame's had so long, they've had the entire summer and we've obviously been playing them for an eternity now. We should be, well within bounds to hopefully blow them out and really get some style points on national TV and start the Heisman campaign for Sam Hartman. So that I'm expecting a big blowout by Notre Dame. That would be the hope and the expectation. Anything could happen, but that's where I'm laying into is Audric Estime is just going to be bullying their defensive line running through. If Audric Estime against Navy secondary with those small ass guys, if Audric Estime breaks through into the secondary, he is actually going to take somebody's life. Why would you attempt to tackle him? Why would you even bother if you're in Navy? Like, I mean, technically, is that a sacrifice for your country? he's a literal human freight train. So, oh man, I absolutely can't wait. We are going 14-0 and winning a national championship, and it all starts in Dublin.
I can't wait. The last time Notre Dame played in Dublin was the 2012 season, where Notre Dame ended up the season in a national championship game. Feels like 88, feels like 2012. Hopefully there's a better ending this time. The line is 20.5. That is a big line. It's week one, or it's week zero. Anything can happen. I could see this being a really tight game. I could see this being a blowout. I like Notre Dame to cover. I don't think this will be close because I think the offense will be just too good. In fact, I think in terms of score predictions, I think the only thing getting in the way of mine is if Sam Hartman is pulled by halftime because of how much we score. I've written mine down, Steve. I'll give you a little opportunity if you haven't already to write yours.
I got it.
To the listeners at home, Steve and I have this weird, this particularly two seasons ago, where we kept predicting our scores ahead of time, and it'd be like eerily close, if not identical. Not every time, so no pressure. But I'm ready. Are you ready?
I'll let you begin. Go ahead.
I just wrote down a score. It is absurd, so I'd be surprised if you have it similar. Notre Dame, 55. Navy, 10.
I was going to go with Notre Dame 52 and Navy 14.
Wow. We've done it again. We both see this being a blowout. I think as long as the defense can solve the Navy issue and get the ball back in the hands of Sam Hartman, this won't be close. If Navy runs the clock down and it's two possessions and we're already done the first quarter, then we might be in for a long game. But overall, I feel like Notre Dame's going to handle their business, and I think this is potentially a championship season. I think Marcus Freeman is the man. I think I want to see at least 10 wins this year, but I'm expecting 12.
Spot on. Agree with you every step of the way. That's everything I got on my end. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to the Four Horsemen podcast again in our sixth season. A lot of ride or die fans out there that are constantly engaging with us on Twitter, which we certainly appreciate. So throw us a follow, and thank you very much for listening, and go Irish.
Well said, Steve. Thank you, everybody. Follow us on Twitter at Horseman Pod. Contribute in any way you can. We appreciate it. We'll be doing some appearances on other podcasts, so we'll be publishing that as well. And let's ride in for another season. It's Notre Dame time. You know how it is. It's a cult for a reason. Starts off week zero at Navy in Dublin. Have fun if you're going to the game. Have fun if you're not and watching from home, because either way, it's a national championship season. I feel it in my bones. It feels like 1988. Go Irish, beat Navy.